Welcome to the High Premises Files podcast with me, your presenter, Charlotte Howden. I'm an HG campaigner and the co-producer and presenter of the world's first documentary about high premises. Sick, The Battle Against HG is available now on Prime Video in the UK and the US, with other countries following soon. The High Premises Files podcast acts as a voice for all women who are currently suffering with or who have survived high premises gravidarum. On this week's podcast, I'm joined by Jeannie. Jeannie is a mum of three from Canada and is the CEO and head trainer of a fitness and wellness business called Keep Fit Women. Her first two pregnancies went undiagnosed, each one worse than the other, and managed mostly by medication. Today we'll be talking to Jeannie about her third pregnancy, which has been by far the worst, with symptoms starting just after conception. This is Jeannie's high premises story. Jeannie, I know we're going to be spending the majority of this podcast talking about your third pregnancy, but can you just sum up those two first pregnancies for me and talk about whether you think you just went undiagnosed with HG or if you just think you had pregnancy sickness?
Yeah, so my first pregnancy was back in 2015. And it was a bit of a shock of a pregnancy, and I was also in a new job. So I was very much trying to navigate pregnancy without having sort of prepared for it, if you can say that. And I was severely nauseous when I look back on it, but because I didn't really know what pregnancy was supposed to be like, I think I just thought that it was normal. Mm-hmm. And therefore maybe didn't advocate for myself as well as I could have. So I definitely, when I look back on it, I was extremely nauseous. I lost weight. I had days where I couldn't go to work and I couldn't care for myself. So now with the knowledge that I have and understanding that I have of HG, I think I might have had maybe not as severe of a case, but mild HG. And then my second pregnancy, I was a little bit more prepared. And I actually remember being in the throes of the nausea and the lying on the couch. And one of my friends said, "What about that thing the princess had, that HG thing? Do you think that's maybe what you have?" And then I kind of started doing some Googling. But I never was formally diagnosed during that pregnancy either. So it was worse. My second pregnancy was worse than my first, and my third pregnancy was worse than my second. So it just kind of continued to get worse and worse each pregnancy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really common, that each subsequent pregnancy gets worse and worse. And perhaps with your first two, you know, you were definitely ill-informed and no one had told you about high premises other than knowing about the Duchess of Cambridge. And then this one, this third pregnancy, was just so severe.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly how it went for me. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about those early symptoms then, because when we spoke offline about your story briefly, you did say to me that the symptoms started pretty much after conception. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, it was about a week or two after conception. It was long before I could get a positive on a pregnancy test, and I got a positive on a pregnancy test the early you can possibly do it. I was just 4 weeks when it was that faint line. Wow. So about a week after conception, I started to notice some nausea. And I think too, because of my past pregnancies, I was probably hyper aware and aware that we could be pregnant and aware of what those symptoms would be. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the nausea was within a week or two of conception for sure. By the time I got a positive on a pregnancy test at 4 weeks, I was already throwing up.
How many weeks pregnant were you when you were first admitted to hospital?
I was just under 6 weeks pregnant. Wow. So it was really early. Yeah. because I found out right at 4 weeks and I had
Yeah.
the history of the pregnancies I did, I had actually gone to a naturopath in the area to get an IV bag full of vitamins, but it was more sort of preparing for what could possibly be coming. And then, sure enough, by 5 weeks, I was bedridden. And by 6 weeks, I was in the hospital for severe dehydration.
Oh my God, it's just so early, isn't it? And finding out that early on and having those symptoms already, it just makes the whole experience seem so much longer. I mean, there's not many women, unless you're really actively trying, who might know they're even pregnant at 4 weeks pregnant.
It's wild to think about. With my first pregnancy, I didn't even find out I was pregnant till 7 weeks. And then at 8 weeks, I started to get nauseous. So the fact that, yeah, like most women don't even know they're pregnant if
Yeah.
they're not trying, especially. So it's, yeah, it was incredibly early.
Something else that's really early, of course, is being admitted for the first time into hospital at just 6 weeks pregnant. I wonder what did they want to do for you? How did they want to treat you, and did they give you any medication? How were they looking after you?
Yeah, so I wasn't actually admitted to stay overnight, but I was admitted in the sense they kind of took me into a room and hooked me up to an IV. So all they did really was give me a bag of fluids and send me on my way.
Right.
So it wasn't the most in-depth, but with that said, the fluids were extremely helpful once I kind of was able to get slightly more hydrated. I don't think the nausea subsided, but my other symptoms, like the severe lightheadedness, the headaches, those things subsided slightly. And then for me, the indication that I was incredibly dehydrated was the blacking out, but it was also the color of my urine. So
Yeah.
once I got those fluids, I could tell by the color of my very infrequent pees that I was slightly more hydrated.
So yeah, having those fluids obviously did help, but how were you at that time? What could you do and what couldn't you do? Were you in bed? Were you able to, brush your hair, clean your teeth, that kind of thing? What were you experiencing?
Yeah, it actually wasn't until you and I had kind of had this conversation before and talked about brushing my hair. It brought up a memory that I hadn't otherwise thought about, that my hair, I wasn't able to brush my hair for probably a month because it triggered such extreme nausea that I just could not do it. And I remember the day that I kind of first felt better weeks later. And I had the most massive mat in the back of my head because I had spent so much time lying down on my back that my hair had just turned into this like massive mat that I had to brush out. So it's something like that, as simple as brushing your hair, that became such an extremely difficult task that I couldn't do. In terms of whether or not I was in bed, I was in bed for the majority of days. I remember at one point I kind of walked downstairs and my husband was like, "Oh my gosh, you're out of bed." Like he was so joyfully happy that I got out of bed. And he had to help me in the shower. We ended up putting a chair in the shower because I was blacking out so frequently that it wasn't safe for me to be standing in the shower. I was able to brush my teeth and do things like that, but it was definitely those simple tasks you should be able to do during the day became so strenuous and so difficult to do.
Jeannie tells me that the 6 week to 12 week period was the worst. She was completely bedbound. She would black out regularly, was constantly dizzy, lost 10% of her body weight, and her husband often had to help her to the toilet as she was too weak. Luckily, Jeannie's doctor throughout this period was amazing. While she was unable to see her in person due to COVID, she was always at the other end of the phone and was willing to keep trying different medications until they found the right combination. From what you've said to me, Jeannie, it sounds like at this point, with everything that was happening, with the blackouts, the dizziness, the dehydration, your husband was pretty much your carer.
Yeah, actually, we were very lucky. As bad as this pandemic has been, he was off work because of it. So otherwise, I think we would have had to have one of my mother-in-law, my mom, move in because I was so incapable of not only caring for myself, but we have two other children. So our kids were 4 and 2. They're now 5 and 2. but there was no way I could care for them and in a safe way, nor myself. So yeah, my husband was a bit of a superhero during those months for sure.
And how are you feeling mentally at this point?
Yeah, I think I was very fortunate in that I had so much support from my husband and my family that I didn't get depressed. But the feeling that stands out so vividly to me when I reflect back on those weeks is a feeling of being utterly trapped in my body.
Yeah.
Like, I just remember feeling so nauseous. And it's, I know you know because you've experienced it, but it's a type of nausea that you cannot describe. It is so intense. The vomiting is so exhausting. I was throwing up during my worst weeks, 30, 40 times a day. So you're physically exhausted from that. And I just remember feeling trapped. I cannot get out of this. No matter what I do, I am stuck in this. So that sense of desperation, along with the isolation of being in bed, along with the guilt that I could not care for my other children and that my husband was having to do everything. It was a very intense time emotionally and physically.
That was obviously a battle for you, but luckily, and it really is truly wonderful to hear that you had a doctor who was on the other end of the phone, you know, day or night, you could talk to. She took you seriously and was really very happy to keep trying different medications, seeing what was working, see wasn't working, and, you know, just keep you going with medication and encourage you. And that must have been just wonderful.
It did. Yeah. I remember calling her because again, we were in the heights of a pandemic. So I didn't actually go in person, so she couldn't see me. And I remember thinking like, how am I going to describe how terrible I feel? I didn't know how I was going to do that with the little energy that I had. And I remember feeling worried that I was going to have to really fight and really advocate for myself in order to get the care that I needed. And within the first phone call, she said, you know, if X, Y, and Z happen, get yourself to the emergency room. And in the meantime, let's get you on medication and let's see if it can work and call me back if it doesn't start helping. So she was very much, if I had an issue after a week, the medication wasn't working, she was right away to call me back that day. And okay, I've sent a different prescription and we're going to try this instead. So she was, yeah, she was fantastic.
Has it ever crossed your mind, thinking about what this experience could have been like, if she hadn't have been so helpful and so encouraging?
It has. And I think there's kind of two aspects to that. I think at that time I was feeling so desperate that having a medical professional validate my experience was hugely helpful mentally. And then of course, physically having that access to medication is what enabled me to be safe and have my baby be safe. So I think without those interventions and without that kindness and professionalism on her aspect of things, I think I would have been in a much worse place, both mentally and physically.
I really am so pleased to hear that, and I think it's important that we do highlight the incredible doctors that do help women with hyperemesis, and your doctor is obviously one of those, because it really does show how easy it is to look after a woman with hyperemesis. Sometimes it is trial and error. Sometimes, yes, things aren't going to work, but sympathy, empathy, and actually just giving things a go and making things accessible, you know, it's just so easy to do.
Yeah. And I had experiences with other nurses and doctors in the hospitals that were not as great. So having that contrast of experience really highlighted to me how great she was and how receptive she was to the experience that I was having with HG.
Yeah.
Jeannie had to endure three more trips to the emergency room for dehydration, and her experience when in hospital was a little hit and miss. Some nurses and doctors, like she said, had heard of HG, and other doctors, despite having a diagnosis of hyperemesis, would still refer to it as morning sickness. After these trips, her doctor set her up under the home health scheme, which meant that a nurse would come every other day to give her fluids if she needed them, check her blood pressure, and just generally see if she was okay. being admitted and staying in hospital during a global pandemic isn't exactly ideal. And I know this has been a very difficult period for everybody, but tell me a little bit more about the reception you received when you were in hospital from the doctors and the nurses.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that stands out for me with having gone through it during a pandemic is that my husband couldn't come with me for anything. So he would literally like pack up the kids in the car, drive me to the hospital, and I would walk in by myself. Sometimes I needed to pause and, you know, I was so lightheaded, I had to sit down trying to even get into the hospital, and he couldn't come help me because guests or visitors, whatever you want to call them, weren't allowed even in the state that I was in. So that stands out to me. And in terms of the way that the nurses and the doctors responded, most of the nurses were quite kind, but there was one instance with a doctor who kind of rushed in with my chart. And at this point, I had been diagnosed with HG. I think it was my third time in the hospital for dehydration. And he said, I think he was trying to be kind, but he said, you know, with morning sickness, you're often better at 12 weeks and you're 9 weeks now, or 9 or 10 weeks, I can't remember, but so you're almost there. And I just remember my body like physically sinking, like, are you kidding me? You're looking at my chart and I have a diagnosis of hyperemesis gravidarum in my chart. So don't call it morning sickness, because as everyone in the HD community knows, that's so frustrating to hear. It's not the same thing. And two, if you had any knowledge and awareness of HD, it often does not go away after 12 weeks. So I just felt so defeated when he said that, and not recognized for, I'm not just throwing up, I'm very dangerously dehydrated and sick at this point. Yeah. And he didn't acknowledge that. But I remember again, very vividly, I was so sick and so tired. I didn't stand up for myself. I didn't sort of advocate for myself. I just said, okay, like, hopefully you don't see me again.
I know. And I know personally that I felt quite guilty about that, in that, you know, I haven't said something, I haven't spoken up, and it was kind of on me to advocate for myself. But when you're in that moment, you know, you don't have the strength to even think about how best to articulate your point and, you know, how to get that across. It's almost impossible to string two sentences together. So advocating for yourself just goes out the window.
Yeah. The trying to string sentences together, very accurate description. You're just so tired and sick that, the thought of trying to stand up for myself just wasn't plausible at the time. Yeah. And you're right. I do look back on that and go, like, you know, the next time somebody goes in there with HG, he's going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
And I could have made a small difference in the way he maybe responded to the next woman with HG. But at the time, it just, and that's why I think too, it would have helped if my husband could have been there.
Yeah.
Because at least he would have the energy and he could speak to how sick I was. This wasn't just nausea. This was a concerning medical event happening.
Yeah.
So it was definitely a bit of a defeating moment.
Yeah.
Tell me about the home help nurse. Because I find this fascinating. This is exactly, and your experience is exactly what we are championing for and pushing for every single woman with hyperemesis. So I'd love to hear about your experience.
Yeah, it was, again, thanks to my family doctor. I had had to go to the ER, I think it was 3 times in about a week and a half, because I was so dehydrated. I just couldn't keep water down. And she was, of course, getting the reports from the hospital that I was going in for dehydration. So when I had my next call with her, she said, you know what, that's enough. We're setting you up with an in-home nurse. Mm-hmm. And where I am in Ontario, Canada, it's actually covered by our OHIP program. So I didn't have to pay out of pocket for it. And instead of having to wait 6 hours, which was one of the times I had to wait in the emergency room while throwing up in the corner, the nurse came into my house, set up my IVs, gave me a bag of fluids every other day. The medical supplies were shipped to my door. It was incredible. And I really, truly believe that having that consistent hydration is what helped me, is what enabled me to get back to a somewhat normal life. Mm-hmm. So I had that nurse come in for about 10 weeks every other day. And actually it was amazing because we wanted to go to the family cottage and I was feeling slightly better. So I felt like I could do that. And that change of scenery, my husband was just really adamant that it would be good for my mental mm-hmm. health. Yeah. And sure enough, they just sent a nurse from that area about an hour and a half from our home to our cottage, and they set me up with an IV at the cottage. So we're so lucky here in Ontario. I don't know if it's available in other provinces, but I felt very fortunate to have that.
It just does sound so incredible. And that extra mile they went for you, you know, when you weren't actually at your home for that period when you had gone to your holiday cottage, you know, it just sounds so simple to me. And maybe I'm able to make things simple because I don't work for the NHS, but that really is what we're all striving for. And I think, again, talking about your experience with the emergency room and here in the UK in the A&E, it's horrendous being there and it just massively exacerbates your symptoms.
Yeah, absolutely. That one day where I was there for 6 hours, I had texted my husband and said, just come pick me up. I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, you need to stay and get the fluids. So it can be really exhausting and mentally difficult to just, mm-hmm. and there are of course other people coming in. It's an emergency room with, you know, one guy I remember had chest pain and I thought, of course he needs to be seen first. Like, you just have to sit, get through this, just get through the next 5 minutes. And it ended up being 6 hours. It was awful. Mm-hmm.
If you don't follow Jeannie on social media, then you probably should do. That's if you're interested in female health and female fitness. With over 11,000 followers on Instagram alone, a successful online Keep Fit women brand, and as someone dedicated to help women achieve their goals, Jeannie has worked tirelessly to achieve this following and is widely respected in the fitness community. I'm keen to find out more about how hyperemesis may have sabotaged this achievement and possibly took away from her something that she so clearly loves. Before I had my son, I was definitely someone I think you would describe as, you know, who really enjoyed fitness. I really enjoyed working out. I was an avid walker. And I'd kind of planned in my head that that kind of fitness routine that I had was going to continue when I was pregnant. It might change a little bit. And I remember I'd actually planned to start going swimming instead of lifting weights and that kind of thing. And whilst I expected my body to change during that period, I obviously wasn't expecting that, you know, one of the things that for me was my me time, it was something that I really enjoyed, was going to be completely taken away from me. Now, I don't run a fitness company. I'm not trained in fitness. I'm not a PT. It's not my career. I am passionate about it and I enjoy it. But for you, you know, even as a fitness person who is pregnant, that deterioration in your body and what you were going through and what impact that was going to have on your business and your brand, that must have been really overwhelming.
Yeah, it was really difficult, sort of in twofold, because in one aspect, I was really excited to work out while pregnant. Like, as you said, fitness for me is very similar to what it is for you. It was a sense of me time. It was almost a meditative state for me. Like, I love exercising. I've made a business and a career out of it. And I specifically train women, and a lot of them are moms. So I have certifications in personal training, but also pre and postnatal exercise. So I have the knowledge of why exercise can be so beneficial and should be done during pregnancy. But also very aware that I was not in that state where it was safe to do. So for me, it was mentally difficult because that sort of self-care and me time was ripped away from me. But then on the other side of things, it's my business and it's my job. So I had to have people who work for me do the classes that I was supposed mm-hmm. to run. And I had this vision of doing, even though I knew it was unlikely, I had a vision that maybe I would feel good this pregnancy and I would be able to redo. I have a prenatal fitness program and I would be able to revamp it while I was pregnant with this yeah. baby. And those things were just completely, completely ripped away. And I think even though I knew I was likely to have a bad pregnancy, one, I didn't think it would be as bad as it was. And two, yeah. I was I was just really hopeful that it wouldn't be like that, and that mm-hmm. I'd be able to, you know, have that beautiful pregnancy that other people have. And I think mentally what was sort of difficult for me was I tend to be a very positive and happy person, but I spent weeks feeling really resentful toward my body and like my body was failing, which is not like me, because I do see the body through that fitness lens where it's a tool and it can be so strong and powerful. And yet I was in this state where I was really resentful toward my physical body. So yeah, it was really difficult being in the fitness industry and not being able to partake in exercise and not being able to, you know, share what I was doing to have a healthy pregnancy. Instead, I was just sharing pictures of me with my head in a bucket to make it relatable for other women who had similar experiences.
Was there any financial impact to your business due to your high premises?
I think because, one experienced two bad pregnancies before, and I also had postpartum anxiety after my second child. Mm-hmm. And I've spent the last 2 years since he was born, or now almost 3 years, really learning to delegate and to be okay with delegating. So in that regard, I was okay with delegating because I really worked on that over the past 2.5 years. But it was just don't even know how to articulate it. It was just that loss of self, that loss of I'm not me anymore. Like, what am I if I'm not Jeannie the fitness girl, you know, which might sound sad to some people, but it's what I enjoy so much. And again, it's my career. I have, you know, people who follow me on Instagram that expect fitness content. And then for 9 months, I wasn't able to provide that. So how do I engage with my community without being able to be the kind of fitness person that they expect me to be? Mm. So yeah, it was quite difficult.
You mentioned there about that resentment that you felt towards your body. And I wonder if that, you know, have you gone back to how you were before and how you felt about your body before or not?
I think it's actually, I'm better than I was before, which I know I'm very fortunate to be able to say, but along with getting the medication and, of course, taking care of myself physically with a medicinal lens, I worked with my massage therapist is also a Reiki practitioner. And she came in and worked with me and had a lot of conversations about trying to accept where I was and what I could learn out of it, which is not an easy thing to do when you are in the throes of HG. And I recognize that might sound a bit woo-woo to people who are in it right now. But I started, instead of having that self-care time where I worked out, I shifted that to meditating and journaling and really acknowledging my feelings and confronting the ugly feelings. And I think it enabled me to look back on the experience and have some sense of gratitude for what it taught me.
Yeah.
Along with being very resentful that I had to go through that, I'm trying to shift it to, you know, now I have this knowledge that I can share with my clients. I work with thousands of women. So some of them will have HG, or some of them will have nausea, or some of them might not have pretty pregnancies, or some of them might lose the baby, which is something I was fearful of. So I'm trying to look at it with now I get to relate to more people and hopefully be able to help them in some small way, and acknowledge, holy poop, what my body went through and I made it. So I have this sense of gratitude toward my body now, which I'm really, really grateful for, because during those really bad weeks, I did not envision ever being grateful for the body that kind of put me through that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really interesting perspective on this, because, you know, yes, if I look back at the height of my high premises and think about someone coming to me and saying, oh, you know, you should really try journaling or meditating, it's very likely that I would have sworn at them, right? But, you know, the fact of the matter is, once I was a bit better in that pregnancy when I was heavily medicated, I do wish sometimes that it was at that point that I'd taken the time to process what I had been through. I don't blame myself for that as such, but 3 years after birth is quite a long time to wait, and it was a long time for me to be walking around with those feelings. So yeah, I agree with you. I think processing it whilst you're still, you know, suffering with high premises isn't such a bad idea, as long as you feel able to. I think it's something that I now wish I had done.
Yeah, and that's why I'm so grateful for that, this massage therapist and Reiki practitioner, because she told me what I didn't want to hear, right? Like when you're that sick, she actually came into my house to give me treatment. I think I was 9 weeks because I was too sick to get out of the house. So I was in a bad state. And when she said that, I remember thinking, like, the last thing I'm gonna do is reflect on what I can learn from this. Like, are you kidding? But I know
Oh, to
her and I
get
have
pregnant. That's
yes, exactly.
the
A vasectomy immediately for my husband.
only thing
But I remember because I have this relationship with her and because I know how helpful she's been in other areas of my life, I really respect her
learned. Yeah.
her ways of thinking and her approaches to things. So yeah, I think I was lucky to have been able to kind of do some of that work while I was pregnant. And now I think I do still have work to do in order to process everything that happened. But yeah, it definitely helped. So if anybody listening is in those deep moments, don't feel like you need to do it now, but it just might be something to consider when you feel better, whether that's 5 minutes or a whole day that you feel better. If you take even just a few minutes to start to process all the trauma you've been through, because that's what it is. It is traumatic.
Jeannie continued to feel sick, be sick, and stayed heavily medicated up until she went into labor. Not long after having her son, though, she felt back to normal. Or did she? Tell me about the birth of your son, Jax.
I am again very lucky to say it was a beautiful experience. So I had HG and all the complications with HG. And then the last 3 weeks of my pregnancy, I had some heart complications. So although it was nothing that was life-threatening, my heart rate kept spiking really high and they couldn't figure out why. So I was driving back and forth to the hospital, getting a heart monitor and an EKG and blood work. And this is all while I'm 37, 38 weeks pregnant. So it was very stressful because they wanted to figure out what was going on with my heart before I went into labor, because labor can obviously be very difficult on the body. So they wanted to figure out what was going on. So the last few weeks of my pregnancy were very stressful. And I was supposed to have to go to a high-risk hospital, and I was told I wasn't going to be able to push because it would be too stressful on my heart, and that I was going to have to be induced. And it was just this whole charade of additional complications. And at the end of a hyperemesis pregnancy, it's the last thing I wanted to deal with. But actually, at 39 weeks pregnant, they did a test and found out everything was fine with my heart, thank goodness, and I was going to be able to have a normal labor. So I went into birth, or sorry, I went into labor, I think 3 days later, and everything went picture perfect. It was the pregnancy I would have dreamt, or sorry, the labor I would have dreamt of. It was perfect.
And how long after Jax was born did you start to think, right, no more medication for me, the hyperemesis has gone, and, I'm back to normal now?
Yeah, so it's funny when I look back on it, because I w went into labor in the morning and forgot to take my medication because I was in early labor, so I
As
wasn't
you
thinking about that. And
remember.
then I was throwing up during my labor, which can be normal for labor, but I was laughing, thinking like, is this HG or is this labor? I don't know. So the day he was born, I was throwing up. And then by the time he was, I think, 5 hours old, I was due for my next dose. I didn't take it and I didn't throw up again. So it was an immediate relief. I did feel nauseous within the first few hours. I know some people say they feel better like literally the second the placenta comes out. But I hadn't eaten and was up all night. So I think that was contributing to the nausea. I was just exhausted. But by the time I kind of had a cat nap and we were on our way home 3.5 hours after he was born, I haven't thrown up or felt nauseous since.
And that is so nice to hear. How old is Jax now?
He is 7 weeks old, so he's still very fresh.
Oh, he's still so young. But I mean, that also means, of course, that you are only 7 weeks postpartum. So, in terms of what we were talking about earlier about some of the things that you've had to work on, do you still feel that there are still some things that you need to do and some things that you still need to process? Is now the right time, only 7 weeks postpartum, or do you feel ready to do that?
Yeah, I think I'm still figuring it out, to be honest. There was an incident where my baby, being 3 weeks old at the time, spit up for the first time. And it was a regular baby spit up. It wasn't anything, out of the ordinary. But I immediately started crying and shaking a little bit and had to hand the baby over to my husband. And at that moment, I was like, I still have work to do. Like this, there's still some trauma responses coming up. So I don't know yet. I think I'm so newly postpartum and so much enjoying not feeling nauseous that I don't think about it maybe as much as I should, but I do think I have work to do, and I've actually reached out to a therapist about going to therapy and just sort of unloading a bit. Because the other thing is the response to how my son spit up was sort of an indicator that I wasn't over everything. But also I feel this sort of sense of desperation to share about HG, which I don't know if that's normal or not, but I feel so passionately that like other people need to know how bad this is for women. And I don't know if that will ever subside or if that's me needing to process the trauma. I don't know what that is, but that's something else that sort of stood out to me, like, calm down, Jeannie, like I think I need to acknowledge, and maybe this is helping me now just saying it, but acknowledge that not everybody will understand and that that's just the reality of it. So in short, yes, I still have some work to do, I guess.
I'm probably not the best person to answer that question, having pretty much thrown myself into the world of high premises and campaigning. But look, what I do know is that by sharing your story, it does help you, but it also helps other people. And by sharing your story on your social media platforms, you have a large following. It really does create a space and gives an opportunity for women to not just resonate with your story, but to perhaps put connections together and join dots and look at their experience in a different way as they listen to yours. And yeah, it really does help. And social media is a great place for that. It's not always the best place, and the internet isn't always the best place, but for our community, it really is a great space to be able to talk about the trauma that we have experienced.
Yeah, I have through my fitness business, I have a modest following on Instagram, and I've shared very openly about my experience with HG, and I've had so many women either, been tagged in a story from a friend, they know that they're going through it, and they'll send me a private message, like, I'm 7 weeks pregnant and I didn't know what to do, and I heard your story. And it's really nice to be able to provide a space for people to feel acknowledged when they're in those deep, dark moments. So yeah, I'm really grateful for social media and the internet and yeah, all the forums and information that's online now, because I think that really helps to provide support. And what you're doing too, having the stick film, like, holy smokes, to be able to say, hey, family, this is what I'm going through. I don't want to explain it to you, but here's a documentary that covers it. Like, hugely helpful to women. So thank you for what you're doing.
Any last pieces of advice or nuggets of wisdom that you would like to share with our listeners who might be currently suffering and going through hyperemesis?
I think my biggest piece of advice, and this took me three pregnancies to learn, so please don't wait for multiple pregnancies to learn this, but advocate for yourself. And as difficult as that can be when you're exhausted, encourage your family to advocate for you too. If we're not in a pandemic and you can bring your partner or your parent or whomever with you to the doctor, like, be prepared to advocate for yourself and be descriptive on how you feel, and don't shy away from being really detailed, because I think sometimes we need to speak really loudly to be heard, and it's not always comfortable to do, but sometimes that's what needs to happen in order to get the help that you need and you deserve. And then I know everybody says this, but it does end, and you do feel better eventually. And as difficult as that is to imagine, there will be an end point, and just, get help if you need it. Talk to somebody if you need it, and know that you're not alone.
Jeannie, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast and sharing with us your story. I wish you and your family all the very best for the future and lots of success for your fitness company and your fitness brand.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was truly an honor to be able to share my story. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Hyperemesis Files. If you have been affected by anything that has been spoken about in today's podcast, please visit your local hyperemesis charity or speak to a healthcare provider. For more information about the documentary Sick, The Battle Against HG, please visit www.thesickfilm.co.uk.